No talking points, no spin, it's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hey, hey, hi, it's Michael Caputo. Thanks a lot for tuning in to Still Standing. This is my weekly podcast. I also do some videos and some blogging here and there at stillstandingpodcast.com. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I got to tell you, this week has been a very interesting week when it comes to the Mueller investigation. Of course, you know, I'm concerned about my friend Roger Stone, old friend Roger Stone, as his house was raided commando style a couple of weeks ago. But he's fighting it out, man. And if anybody's got a chance at beating back bogus charges, it's Roger Stone. I'm hoping he doesn't get a gag order out of Judge Berman. Judge Berman might do that. It's very possible. Not sure if she will, but she did it to Roger's old partner, Paul Manafort. Very different charges here, very different case. And Roger, after coming out swinging after he was arraigned in Fort Lauderdale, doing every TV show he could get his hands on to talk about his innocence, Roger has gone silent on his case, on the particulars of his case anyway, while still taking interviews when he can get them. I think his lawyers have said, okay, Roger, you've made your case. You've been out there in the media. You've screamed about your innocence. But if you want to continue to have an opportunity to make money, which is how Roger makes money, you know, being in the media, he's on InfoWars and elsewhere making his living. If you want to still do that, you got to stop talking about your case. And perhaps Judge Berman will see that as a good compromise when it comes to how you deal with a media personality's charges against a media personality. And of course, Roger has charged in a brief filed just this week with the judge that the Mueller investigation appears to have tipped off CNN and frog marched him out in front of the CNN camera when they raided his house at 6 in the morning a couple of weeks ago. We'll see how that comes out. But I'm really interested in talking today about how this Mueller investigation may end. We see NBC News, of all places. NBC News had a headline, I guess, on the 12th of February in a story by Ken Delanian, of all people. The headline saying the Senate has uncovered no direct evidence of conspiracy between Trump, the Trump campaign, and Russia. That's interesting stuff, I think, in a lot of ways. The Senate investigation, I testified before the Senate, they were not a cakewalk. They were difficult. The Democrats there were clearly in close cooperation with the Republicans. It was not a partisan, investigation that was controlled by the Republicans who were holding off the Democrats. They were in very close cooperation, and anybody who thinks that somehow or another Senator Burr, the chairman, was partisan in his investigation, they're not paying attention. I saw, some people out there, particularly this guy Seth Abramson. Woo, what a nut job he is. He's actually a professor at the University of New Hampshire, which is hilarious. If your kids are going to the University of New Hampshire, I double check. You better double check, because this guy, if that's the kind of professor they have there, well then, gosh, you really need to understand, you need to question what kind of education they're getting. But, this guy Abramson says that Ken Delanian, who has been a reliable purveyor of disinformation about the Mueller investigation and the House and Senate investigations into the bogus Russia collusion narrative, and somehow or another, Seth Abramson, who probably has quoted Ken Delanian ad nauseum, is now claiming that he created, quote-unquote, domestic disinformation, which is hilarious, because Seth Abramson, who is widely considered to be a nutty conspiracy theorist himself. He actually teaches a class on Russian collusion at the University of New Hampshire, if you didn't think academia was crazy enough. He teaches a class in this crap, right? There are kids getting credit hours for this crap. He's getting paid for this crap. He's got like 600,000 followers on Twitter, and he's nuts. And now he's turning on Ken Delanian. Ken, who very quickly after he started getting a lot of these tweets at him by guys like Seth Abramson, was quick to put up another tweet that said, hey, they didn't prove that the president was colluding with Russia, but they also didn't prove that he wasn't. I don't know where that comes from. We also have not been able to prove that Ken Delanian isn't actually Mark Spitz, the gold medalist in the swimming pool for the United States Olympic team. We have not been able to prove that Ken Delanian is actually a Martian, is not actually a Martian. The reason I bring this up is because we know now, there are some reports that say, for example, an interview with the president's former attorney, who is no longer working with him on this Russia investigation, said that he doesn't believe that there's going to be a final report out of Robert Mueller. That's probably a pretty solid guess. But people are saying now that Robert Mueller is winding down his investigation, that the indictment of Roger Stone was the last one he had in his queue, that his magazine is empty, that he's now at the end of the rope, that at the end of this final hallway of the Mueller investigation, he is dealing with the likes of, well, Jerome Corsi, who doesn't believe that we landed on the moon, who believes that 9/11 is an inside job. He's dealing with the likes of Randy Credico, a failed comedian out of New York City who runs around in women's underwear proudly. And, of course, Larry Klayman, Jerry Corsi's attorney, who is certifiably cuckoo. These are the people that the Mueller investigation, with their vast amounts of Yale law school education, these are the people they're facing down in the final days of their investigation. How ignominious. But this is the end, they say. This may be the end, that the Mueller investigation has come to a close and that they are either writing a report or they're not. Now, mind you, it's not required, this report. And certainly, if the report is written, it's not required that it must be released to the public. Now, of course, those of us who are living on planet Earth know that if there is a document as sexy as the final report out of the Mueller investigation, it will be leaked. No doubt it will be leaked. But frankly, this is where we are today, where the likes of Seth Abramson are turning on the likes of Ken Delanian, a conspiracy theorist extraordinaire, is turning on the reporter who fed his conspiracy theories. And this is going to happen more and more. We see now that the chairman of the House Select Committee on Intelligence has criticized Robert Mueller, someone the Russia Trump conspiracy theorists have held up as King God himself. But apparently, according to the chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, I will not use his name. According to this chairman, Robert Mueller has indeed led a flawed investigation when it comes to Donald Trump's corporate and personal finances. So we see people who really want to believe, who really in their heart must believe, who cannot for their lives believe that Donald Trump and nobody around him, nobody, they cannot believe there was no collusion. They want so deeply in their souls to think that America is being led by a traitor. That's something that they have ingrained in themselves. They have carved that into their dark hearts. So much so that when a reporter like Ken Delanian says, well, I mean, in his headline, that the Senate has uncovered no direct evidence of conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia. They start pounding him. Seth Abramson, you know, says that indeed you're creating domestic disinformation from the expert in creating domestic disinformation, Seth. And of course, now the congressional purveyors of this bogus investigation are starting to turn against Mueller. What is going to happen, ladies and gentlemen? That's my point here. What is going to happen when the Mueller investigation either finishes without much fanfare and nobody is accused of direct collusion? When the final Mueller investigation is behind us, maybe there's a report and there is no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. What are these people going to do? What will they do with themselves? Let me tell you, my family has been harassed. Harassed. My company has been destroyed. My ability to make a living has been eliminated, virtually, by these troops, these legions of conspiracy theorists like Seth Abramson, professor at University of New Hampshire. We have been ruined. I'm one of dozens. J.D. Gordon, many more. Most of them are quiet. Most of them are silent. They have decided that in order to survive this, they will remain under the radar. I made the decision to do the opposite. J.D. Gordon is on television at OAN, but he avoids this topic oftentimes. Probably smart. I don't. I've embraced it. I've decided that I'm going to go down swinging. My company, we've closed offices. We've laid people off. We've lost staff through attrition as clients walk away because I'm just too controversial. Probably a bad decision on my part to fight this, to stay in the public eye and go on television and defend the President of the United States. There is no upside to it, ladies and gentlemen. None. There is no upside. Now, I'm really happily enjoying the support of about 10,000 people out there who help pay my legal bills and encourage me and my family along the way. But if this comes to an end, what's going to happen? Are these people, these conspiracy theorists, going to continue into the future saying, well, Mueller didn't prove it. The Senate didn't prove it. The House is still looking into it. We know Donald Trump colluded with Russia. We know he personally has some kind of device in his home to communicate directly with Vladimir Putin without any proof of that device. We know that this is really going on. We know that the likes of the senior campaign staffers were, you know, secretly meeting for cold shots of vodka to coordinate the release of these emails. We know it. Even though Robert Mueller couldn't prove it with a coterie of Hillary Clinton supporters as investigators and dozens of FBI agents working diligently, they could not prove it. The Senate, who was working directly, by the way, the Senate Intelligence Committee Democrats were working directly with Fusion GPS all along the way. With all these reporters deployed with Russia smell in their nostrils, wanting blood from the Trump campaign, the Trump family, Donald Trump himself. All these people have tried so hard to prove this and failed. How long will this go on? Will Seth Abramson and his ilk devour Ken Delanian and his ilk? The reporters who actually have to confess to themselves that they have been duped all along. What's next for these folks? Where does it go? Really, if this is coming to an end, does it ever end? I'm not quite sure it ever ends for my family and for the other families who have been caught up in this bogus investigation. I'm not sure it ever ends. God bless Roger Stone and the rest who have been caught up and charged in this debacle. God bless them all. But anyway, God bless you for listening. I appreciate this. I don't know where it's going. I really don't. And I keep saying it, buy more popcorn, friends, because this is going to be interesting. Still standing, unstained. Hi, it's Michael Caputo again. Thanks for sticking around for Still Standing. That's stillstandingpodcast.com. You can check it out. Subscribe. Check us out on iTunes. You can check us out on all the usual suspects, all the usual platforms. But also you can subscribe over at stillstandingpodcast.com. We'll give you an email whenever one of the new episodes comes out. Stitcher, all the rest of them. The entire Department of Justice seems to have gone wild. DOJ gone wild. You can see it reported all across the internet, all across the news today. Apparently with Andrew McCabe, the disgraced and fired FBI official, who was fired just days before his retirement vested, that he apparently was the source of a leak some months ago that said that Rod Rosenstein, as deputy director, as the number two in the Department of Justice, was at one point considering sending people in with wires to record the president in conversations, but also was considering invoking the 25th Amendment. That 25th Amendment, you know about the 25th Amendment. It's the way to remove a president through a majority vote of his cabinet and the vice president. By removing him by the means of the Constitution, anybody who understands that knows that it's a drastic measure. It is, if you ask anyone who is an opponent of the president, it's probably an act of patriotism. But those of us who support the president, and by the way, those of us who are kind of supporting him once in a while and opposing him, people are on the fence about him, you got to see it as a coup. I mean, when I was interviewed on television about this leak some time ago, now we find out clearly it was McCabe that made that leak, that I said it's a coup. It's a soft coup. It's a hard coup. It's a coup coo-ca-choo. It doesn't matter what you call it. It is a coup. Rod Rosenstein, in the days after the firing of James Comey as FBI director, for several days was working with men and women in Maine Justice, counting heads, not actually contacting members of the cabinet, but trying to do what in politics we call a soft count. Is this person, can we count on him for a vote to remove the president? Can we count on Elaine Chao, on her vote to remove the president? Answer to that is yes. They were doing a soft count of who they could count on. Of course, they would need the vice president to vote in favor of it as well. Rod Rosenstein was plotting a coup. Now, when the news came out, this leak came out that Rod Rosenstein was trying to get people to wear wires when they were talking to the president, that he was considering invoking the 25th Amendment to remove the president. He said, oh, come on. I was joking. And then he went to talk to the president. We thought Rosenstein would be fired. But indeed, the president kept him on. I'm sure he said to the president, oh, Mr. President, I was joking. Does Rod Rosenstein look to you like a joker? Like the kind of guy who, puts a joy buzzer on, walks around the office and shakes hands. Yeah, 25th Amendment. No, he does not. It was a coup attempt. There's no question in my mind. This is the Department of Justice gone wild. They could not bear that the American people had chosen Donald Trump to be president of the United States. They knew that they were breaking the law under Obama, trying to spy upon the Republican candidate for president of the United States. They knew that this was going to come out. They knew that the president was not going to stand for it. And then the president fired James Comey. All these people who were in Rosenstein's office at the DOJ, who were trying to figure out this soft count as to who would vote to invoke the 25th Amendment. These were all people who were part of the Comey clan. This is craziness. The idea that they would work for days on this, Rod Rosenstein should be gone right now. But the question we have is this, and this is the core of the problem the president faces. Do you believe Andrew McCabe? There are so many liars at the Department of Justice and in the Obama FBI that you don't know who to believe. Maine justice is corrupt. You should really read Sidney Powell's book, License to Lie. It's an incredible book. That the Department of Justice is befouled. It is. It just is. It needs radical reformation. Is William Barr, the new Attorney General, going to do it? I don't know. I don't think when he served as Attorney General once before that it was this befouled. But Rod Rosenstein, if you believe Andrew McCabe, needs to go. And if you don't believe Andrew McCabe, where are you? You got to be throwing your hands up like I am right now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is outrageous. I guess we should have expected this news since we heard this leak. I guess it was in the New York Times some time ago. We should have expected this when Andrew McCabe was out pimping his book, that he'd be putting this rumor, his name to this rumor. Do you believe, Andrew McCabe, do you believe that Rod Rosenstein was, one, trying to convince people to wear a wire to record the president in private conversations, and two, do you believe that Rod Rosenstein was working with his inner circle at Maine Justice, trying to count heads in the president's cabinet to figure if he could invoke the 25th Amendment? Wow. I don't know. I got to tell you, I don't know who I believe, Andrew McCabe or Rod Rosenstein, because here's the reason why. I don't think you can believe either of them. How about that, huh? How about that? DOJ gone wild. This is Michael Caputo for Still Standing. We'll be right back after these messages.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Michael Caputo. Thanks a lot for sticking around for Still Standing. Don't forget to check us out. You can please subscribe on iTunes or check us out at stillstandingpodcast.com. If you like it, leave us a review on iTunes. I want to thank James Lewis and Patty Freeling for being our new patrons at patreon.com. Of course, our executive producers, Darcy Swenson, George Noonan, Sonia Carlin, Tom Fulton, Daniel Markey, Steve Flaminio, Jerry Brown, Samantha Lynn, Jack Bromwich, Brian Pizdersky, Jordan Gostomsky, Susan Stevens, John Seaford. Thank you, John, for all your support. And, of course, Julie and Rachel. Now, listen, we've been talking a lot about the Mueller investigation. You've heard me complain about, different members of the Maine Justice operation, all the different Obama holdovers. And you might think that it's just the investigators involved in the Mueller team, the special counsel's office. They're all focused completely at the DOJ on Donald Trump and trying to punish Donald Trump and punish his family and punish his businesses and to destroy his friends, all because they don't want another independent person to ever run for president again, so that, you know, in 15 years, another billionaire decides that his country is broken and only he can fix it. And he turns to his wife one morning when he wakes up and he says, "Wife, I have to run for president." His wife will say, "Are you kidding? Did you see how they destroyed Donald Trump, his family, his businesses, all of his friends? You can't do it. I forbid you." We might think that that's the only reason the Department of Justice is misbehaving. But frankly, there's more to it than that. And it's important to look below the, as they call it, the main state level, where the political appointees and the political influence is held. The people who are appointed by the new administration, by the president and such. The ones who work directly for the attorney general. And we, of course, have had a terrible attorney general with Jeff Sessions, and now we're waiting for William Barr to come in. But see, the Department of State is doing more than you would actually know from just watching the news every night about Russia. And I wanted to talk to you about that. I'm one of the reasons, one of the folks I think about when I think about where the Department of Justice is going wrong, I think about Josh Malone. Josh Malone is one of the smartest guys I ever met. He is the inventor of Bunch of balloons. You've seen them in all your grocery stores, you know, in all your pharmacies and drug stores, those balloons that are that you can fill with water. They're water balloons. You can fill up 20 at a time by screwing a device he invented on the end of your hose. You just fill up 20 at a time instead of one at a time and tying them with your by hand. This ties them automatically. You just flip the end of the hose and you got 24 water balloons for your crazy kids to throw around. Josh invented that because he's got a lot of kids and they love water balloons and he got tired of tying them. A brilliant invention that really rocked the summer toy market. It's still one of the most popular toys in the United States and has made Josh a very wealthy man. He had to fight through a lot of people standing in his way, especially infringers who tried to steal his idea. But Josh is bright. He's not just an engineer. He's not just an inventor. He's someone who believes in the right of the United that a patent gives you. The United States patent system was developed by our founding fathers. It's not just something that wandered in the 20th century or the 21st century. Patents have been around as long as America has. And Josh and I have worked together. And I wanted to introduce you to Josh Malone. You got to look him up on Google. Josh, thanks for dialing in.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael.
You know, Josh, you have fought to protect your invention. And you have other patents, right?
I do. I have about 12 patents going back to my days at Texas Instruments.
And this, you know, bunch of balloons is one that people can, you know, everybody knows. Everybody knows this invention. Somebody tried to steal the technology from you, the intellectual property from you, and wipe you out. You fought all the way through the court system, through the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and you discovered something important. The fundamental property right of the patent isn't something that's really believed in at the patent office, is it?
Yeah, I've been, it's shocking what the industry thinks patents are. It's a complete 180 from what Americans are taught and what inventors think a patent is a right to their invention. But it's not. They've turned that upside down is what I found through the hard experience of massive litigation across the nation.
Well, it's interesting. You fought this during the Obama years, and you saw that a lot of this infringer class, the rank infringers, most of them come out of, you know, Silicon Valley, who tried to redesign the United States Patent and Trademark Office and succeeded in doing so, so that they could infringe with impunity on important inventions and take away the private property rights of inventors like you. But the president stood up and he appointed a different kind of person as patent director, right?
Yeah, about a year ago, following our first ever in history, the United States Patent Office protest, the president appointed Andrei Iancu to head the patent office, and last week was his 1 year anniversary. And I'll tell you what, this was the best example of swamp draining I've seen. So the director reassigned several of the high-level officials in the patent office, re-leveled the rules, and is basically taken everything within his power to try to restore stability and reliability for inventors in the patent office. So I've been able to, you know, encourage other inventors that there's some hope still, but it's still definitely a game of kings, and inventors overall are not really welcome in the system. It's still a multi-million dollar, decade-long effort if you want to try to enforce your patent rights. I'm in the middle of it, Michael. I don't know. You suggested maybe I've fought and succeeded, but I'm, quite frankly, we've got probably another 6 or 8 years to go.
Isn't that outrageous?
My legal bills are about $50,000 a week, and that's the patent system we have today.
Right. And you're convinced the president was aware of this and bounced a guy who was kind of marked to be the next patent director of the patent office in favor of Andre Iancu, right? You're convinced the president saw that this part of the swamp needed drained.
Oh, yeah, he's been very clear. The president's uncle John, I understand, was a renowned inventor. So I think he definitely understands the need for reliable property rights. And he gave the Commerce Department and the director of the patent office that charter to go do that.
When it's a patent issue that you're fighting, the patent trademark office attorneys represent the government in court. And typically they're pro-patent, right?
Yes, under the new director, they're definitely supporting the right side of the debate, which there shouldn't be a debate, right? I can't believe I'm here, like we're debating about whether patents should be a public franchise or a property right, but that's the Alice in Wonderland world right now.
Right, but basically what you're saying is up until, you know, certainly for the last 200 plus years, patents have always been considered a property right. It wasn't until, let's say, the latter Bush years and the Obama years when the Silicon Valley rank infringer class came in and started controlling and reinventing a patent so that it became an administrative right, something the government could grant and the government could take away. It's not like it's not a property right. It's a government franchise. That's what they're trying to say, right?
It is, and I was shocked. And even the Supreme Court last April came out with a decision, a 7-2 decision, that patents are not property rights; they're public franchises. Justice Thomas said, like the right to operate a toll bridge. Basically, you pay your fee, and the government gives you this monopoly. And so, the way I understand it is, if you're very wealthy and you have lots of influence with the government, then you can have one of these patents or these monopolies.
Right, and
it's really sad.
It is sad, and I'm, especially when you think about what Thomas Jefferson conceived of when he drove the patent issue into the heart of the founding of our nation as a property right. And 7-2, it's not just like it was unfortunately a broad cross section of our United States Supreme Court that patents are no longer what Thomas Jefferson envisioned. It's more like what the bureaucrats envision. But so the Patent and Trademark Office legal representatives, when they represent the government, they're fairly pro-inventor. The problem is, right, when it's a constitutional issue, when it's a fundamental law issue, the DOJ, not the Patent and Trademark Office, but the Department of Justice sends their attorneys in to represent the government in court. And that's where the problem lies, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's, these issues about the constitutionality of taking back patents and the procedures and the due process have been raised over the past 2 to 3 years because it's been such a pillaging. I mean, this Patent Trial and Appeal Board is taking back 85% of the patents that they review. And so
people need to understand that the patent, to get a patent, it costs you tons of money, and the patent examiners work hard to make sure that you deserve the patent. It's something that's novel. It's not been out there before. It's a long-standing process. They grant you a patent, and then the patent, the PTABs, these administrative courts that they have put in under Obama, according to a new law, they take back 85% of those patents.
Yep. If they're valuable and you don't like it, you want to use it for free, you just go and you file a paper and pay a fee in the PTAB, and they'll cancel the patent rights for you.
And when you fight them in court, it's not, if the constitutional fundamental law issue, the Patent Trademark Office solicitor is not the one there on behalf of the government. It's a Department of Justice. It's someone from the civil appellate staff, right? And the director of this office of the civil appellate staff at the United States Department of Justice is a pre-Trump holdover named Mark Freeman. And actually, the guy was around before Obama, but he rose to the leadership of the civil appellate staff under Obama. This Obama holdover, Mark Freeman, comes in to court and says, patents aren't property rights. You're lucky you have one. And we, the government, can take it away anytime we want. And that's what inventors are facing, right?
Yeah, that's the argument. We've actually caught caught this particular attorney copy and pasting arguments from the Obama administration into the briefs in the past year and a half. And it's the same drivel that patents are not property rights. It's just, it's shocking to you know, basic citizens and inventors and even regular attorneys that they're making these arguments. And it doesn't stop. So they won and they convinced the Supreme Court in oil states last year. And even the past several weeks, there's been other questions that remained open about whether a patent is a taking under due process in the Fifth Amendment. And, you know, it clearly is. I mean, they're taking something extremely valuable. And that issue has been raised in the courts. And then, you know, I think the director of the patent office may have one point of view, but he doesn't get to say in these cases. And Mark Freeman, again, is filing briefs saying, no, it's not a taking. If we say that you shouldn't have had a patent, then you shouldn't have had a patent. And you never had a patent. And so we don't have to pay you for it. And that argument's making its way through the courts right now.
Interesting stuff. This you told me about this this one patent holder, an inventor, who came up with a shop vacuum, which cleans its own filter. Anybody who has their own shop and understands the messes you can make understands that cleaning that filter is a really big job. And this inventor came up with a self-cleaning filter for a shop vacuum, licensed Stanley Black & Decker to manufacture it. And then Stanley Black & Decker went to this administrative proceeding, the PTAB, and took it away. They liked it so much, they stole it from the inventor. And this inventor was the lead plaintiff in a class action lawsuit that was bounced by a judge, was dismissed, this class action lawsuit, a few weeks ago. It's going to appeal, but it's this Obama holdover's office, the civil appellate staff, that made the argument that this patent is not a property right. This man was lucky to have this patent, and we can take it away as bureaucrats anytime we like, and we've decided to pull it. And now Stanley Black & Decker can manufacture his invention without paying him a nickel.
That's right. They won't even give him his fees back for his patent. The patent office supposedly made a mistake on. And
so to get a patent, and they won't even return the money that Mark Freeman's office is saying was useless. Never should have been paid because this shouldn't be your patent.
Yeah, it's blame the victim. So the inventor had the nerve to actually expect the government to stand behind its patent promise, and he gets to bear all the cost plus the lost business to his competitor. And of course, all the other inventors and startups and investors, venture capital is taking notice, and it's going elsewhere. It's not going into cutting edge technology in the United States. It's going offshore. It's going into new apps
You inventors can't defend your intellectual property because it's being taken away by bureaucrats who, in this case, are holdovers from the Obama administration. Because the Department of Justice has decided that the patent is not a property right, the investors who usually back American inventors are going elsewhere. They're going to other countries where patents are actually a property right.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's not a good. I mean, a patent is not collateral for that investment anymore. It's just a ticket to a decade-long multi-million-dollar lawsuit, which. That's not a profitable business model.
And if you don't have the money, if you haven't invented something like Bunch of Balloons, which became an instant smash success, the most popular toy in America, summer toy in America, a couple of years running, if you haven't been able to make immediate profits from a brilliant invention, if you, let's say, for example, invent a new fruit fly trap that isn't going to light the world on fire, but it's an important invention for people who suffer from pestilence, right? You're not going to have the money to defend yourself.
Not under the public franchise scheme. Nope. Yeah. Nope.
So what's the White House telling you about this? I mean, you are a fellow at US Inventors, which is what? USinventor.org? Is that what it is?
That's correct.
You're an inventor from Dallas. Everybody should check out Bunch of Balloons. You're a fellow at U.S. Inventor, so you are working with the Associates, the number one Association of American Inventors. How is the White House responding to your complaints?
Well, it's clear he's paying attention, but there's still this confusion at Department of Justice as to what their job is. And it seems like the staff attorneys there and this director, Mark Freeman, have the idea. Their idea is to see how aggressively they can screw the American citizen. And every position, every opportunity they get, they're like, how can we screw over the little guy? And I mean, you read these last briefs, it's shocking. It's shocking the extreme positions that they're taking that then the judges eventually adopt and the professors file amicus briefs saying this is a good idea. And before you know it, you've got, I'm out in the middle of the swamp without a paddle, Michael. Right. And I don't know.
And it looks like the draining has stopped. It was impressive for a while. I mean, the Patent Trademark Office was probably the deepest, dankest part of the swamp. If you look at these administrative agencies, that's where the swamp water gets deep. And the president was doing great work, especially with the Iancu, the new director. But are you guys at U.S. Inventor in touch with the White House?
Not directly. We're ready to go speak with the president and encourage him to reinvigorate patents as property rights to encourage investment in American innovation. I haven't got that invitation yet, but we're ready to go.
Listen, I'll tell you, I got a lot of respect for you, Josh, and for your inventors, your colleagues, inventors at U.S. Inventor. Josh Malone, out of Dallas, Texas, holds multiple patents, brilliant inventor, Bunch of Balloons. You know exactly the toy I'm talking about. Josh, it's important for people to understand that the intransigence at the Department of Justice isn't limited to Russian collusion allegations. It's also going on at the civil appellate level, where they have basically destroyed the value of the traditional American patent system. And do you think this is going to have a good ending?
I hope so, but it's a matter of the public understanding what's going on, and it's not just the sound bites and the talking points that make the headlines. There's a concerted effort to undermine our fundamental values as a nation, and it's happening within these government agencies, and you can clean out one, and then they just scramble and they gather up some other place. And I think we shine a light on it. We get the public to pay attention to what's going on. And we have we'll have a crisis. I mean, China starts one-upping us on cutting edge technology, which they've been doing the past few years, then I think we'll have to wake up. We'll have no choice.
You're a man of great faith, Josh. You really are. Ladies and gentlemen, Josh Malone, usinventor.org. This is a problem much deeper. This part of the swamp is much deeper than the Mueller investigation. Not something that Josh pays a great deal of attention to. But when he's got a whole other department of the Department of Justice, the civil appellate staff, trying to rewrite the American Constitution, where patents aren't property rights at all. You're lucky to have one. And by the way, if we want to take it away as bureaucrats, we can do it anytime we want. That's a fundamental American right, yet another one being taken away by a bureaucrat in Washington. Josh, thanks a lot for dialing in. We're going to be right back after these messages here on Still Standing. Don't forget that stillstandingpodcast.com. Still standing. Unstained.
Don't go anywhere. Still Standing returns after this break.
Hey, thanks a lot for sticking around. It's Michael Caputo again for Still Standing. As you know, you can catch these podcasts and the weekly videos and occasional blog posts all by me over at stillstandingpodcast.com. I do about 40 minutes, 35, 40 minutes of audio a week, and kind of giving you more of my opinion and more, my thoughts on things. I'm on CNN, Fox, MSNBC quite a bit, but they only give you 4 or 5 minutes total, 7 minutes total, and usually with other people involved, whether it's a panel on CNN or a sit-down with Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity. Those, you know, it's pretty quick. You got to be fast on your feet, you know, click, click, click. You got to get your ideas out there. And I try to spend a little bit more time here on the podcast giving you my thoughts on these issues. I'm especially appreciative of people who try to stay in touch with me via email, comments on YouTube where my videos are. I get some iTunes reviews as well, which I really appreciate. When the iTunes sees reviews, they bring your podcast up in the rankings and more people sign up and et cetera, et cetera. So far, this whole podcast idea has been a way to spend money, not to make money. Although we do get great support at patreon.com. I really appreciate everybody who does that. We consider you our executive producers when you support our efforts with a pledge at patreon.com. This guy, one fellow, Rich Chmielnicki. Listen, I'm from Buffalo, New York. I should be able to pronounce every single Polish last name. But Rich, yours is a tough one. He left a review earlier this month on YouTube. On the video I did, actually not earlier this month, last week, I did a YouTube video about my opinion on this whole partial birth abortion bill that passed in New York State, where it is now legal to kill a baby all the way up until the delivery, all the way up until you know, the dilation of the mother. This is the same bill that they tried to pass in Virginia but failed. The one that Governor Northam was trying to defend on the radio when his bad week started. And it's tough for me to do that video. Listen, I used to be in favor of abortion when I was young. I was pretty uninformed. I think I changed my opinion and eventually became a Catholic. I converted to Catholicism in 2000. Doesn't feel like 19 years ago, but it was. And now I'm really a pro-life. And even though I'm pro-life and I feel proud with my opinion on the issue, it's hard to talk about it because, first of all, to me, it's a life or death issue. To me, it's about killing a baby. And to other people, it's not. And a lot of my friends don't agree with me. And they're still my friends. You'll find that I'm not the kind of person who can only be friends with conservatives. In fact, most of my friends, since I'm a Grateful Dead head from way back, most of my friends are liberals. And they tolerate me, and I tolerate them. And we tend not to talk about politics. And abortion is one of those things you talk about. You can lose friends over that. People who support abortion rights are just as committed to their position as I am to mine. But Rich Chmielnicki on YouTube left a comment on my video that's called The Left's War on Normal. He said, Michael, it's a very difficult subject indeed. I believe Pandora's box is now fully open. We know how the legend of Pandora ends. As an eternal optimist, Rich is saying this, I know in my heart there... And we know how the, you know, legend ends, but I know in my heart there'll be time, hopefully in the near future, when all these upside-down laws will be overturned and sanity will prevail. And meanwhile, keep up the good fight. And I really appreciate that, Rich, because it was hard to make that. In fact, I felt so unnerved by it that I I had to pour myself a bourbon. And then Elsie Hertz, who's sent me an email at stillstandingpodcast.com. Elsie is also a friend of mine on social media. Dear Michael, your comment on being forgiving while calling out our abortion tragedy is an outstanding stance and statement. If all people could be of the same honest frame of mind, it would be such a better country. I underline honest, this is Elsie saying this, because I believe very few people in this political world today. I can't believe the evil that I see. And she is very complimentary of that forward. It's hard for me to read compliments. I don't know. I don't believe my PR, you know. I still feel like just Michael from the trailer park, you know. Sonia, L.A. Sonia, left an iTunes review last week as well. She says, I guess L.A., I don't know if it's a woman or a man, L.A. Sonia says, I have enjoyed listening to every episode of your podcast, Michael. I like the way Michael shares the info in addition to the content. It feels like he could be your friend, engaging in a conversation over drinks. He's upfront and fairly assesses situations, the good and the bad. And I hope he continues this forever and gets lots of sponsors. I do too. You know, I enjoy it. You know, I view issues as something that I approach as your neighbor. In fact, my neighbor on the left and on the right of my house, they're both liberals. Now, one of them has resist signs in their yard. And my other neighbor is pretty liberal, comes at it from a religious perspective. Neither side likes Donald Trump, obviously, but we get along pretty well. We actually don't talk issues too much. The neighbors with the resist signs in their yard, we don't talk issues at all. I find them to be really nice folks, retired, beautiful home. The couple that lives next to us with two adopted children, great, great people, a little more liberal than us, but we talk the issues now and then. I approach this as a friend because I do not think that abortion, for example, should be legal, but I understand my friends who do. I get it. I talked about one of my acquaintances, Kristen, who is really a strong believer in abortion. We go back and forth on social media. She doesn't like my position, and it gets a little intense. But you can talk about issues with your friends, and I try to approach this podcast that way. That's what I do on WBEN, where I'm a frequent talk radio host. It's it's important to take these platforms seriously. I take this podcast seriously. I take my time at WBEN seriously. The opportunity to talk on CNN on Anderson Cooper actually tomorrow night, Friday night, I'll be on. On Fox and on MSNBC, I take it all very seriously. I try to prepare for my time on the air. I prepare for these podcasts. I even prepare for the general discussion of, let's say, for example, the new kind of socialist bent of the Democratic Party. I'm actually kind of amazed by it. Actually, I'm not amazed. I understand that a lot of these Ilhan Omar, you know, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, these more socialist-oriented Congress persons who have been elected to the Democratic side, they've actually brought socialism into Washington in a way that we haven't seen before. And now these Washington Democrats have developed a passionate love affair of sorts with socialism. And you know, this whole Green New Deal is a good example of that. It's something I study very closely. I'm very pro-environment. I had a blog for the longest time called The Reasonable Shade of Green. I lived aboard a tugboat in South Florida, and it was powered in large part by solar panels. I would love to have just solar and wind energy as the entire generation for my home. We know we can't heat cool without fossil fuels. Here in Western New York, we'd freeze to death. But now the Democrats are in love with, you know, Green New Deal, single-payer health care. You know, the Green New Deal, if you look at it in its present form, as was introduced this week by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her co-sponsors, Markey and such, it's kind of a socialist wish list, you know, to fix what all these Democrats perceive as all that ails society. And, of course, it would eliminate entire industries in the United States. It would lead to, people say, I agree, trillions of dollars in new spending. The elimination of at least, you know, 1.3 million jobs in America. And it would disrupt the whole entire modern trade system. And, of course, only America would be doing this. This Green New Deal would put us out in front. They call that leadership. I call that giving up because not even Canada is going to be following us in this, but certainly China, Russia, others are not. The 2020 presidential candidates and other prominent Democrats have already co-sponsored this resolution or at least expressed their support for the plan. You know, Bernie Sanders and 16 Democrat co-sponsors have proposed actually converting the American healthcare system into a single-payer system. You know, that's basically Medicare for all. This whole single-payer system, those of us who are conservatives know, it would bankrupt taxpayers. It would outlaw private insurance. We heard that from Kamala Harris. And 200 million Americans are on private insurance. We'd find nowhere. We'd be thrown off of our insurance. And how would we pay our bills? And it, of course, would really disrupt the quality of care. We see that where this kind of a system is already in place. This is really quite something to me, this Green New Deal, single-payer health care. And these are issues that I talk about with my neighbors, with my friends. And I'm virulently opposed to them, and I always will. I think the Green New Deal is going to be a big deal in 2020. I think single-payer health care is going to be a big deal in 2020. I think America is going to reject both. I really do. But I think it's going to be an interesting debate. It's one that we can have with our friends. I think Republicans are going to come out on top of that. I think Donald Trump is going to be a solid salesman for our ideas. I think he understands these concepts. I know people try to paint Donald Trump as stupid. He's not. I've known him a long time. He's a very bright man. He can speak about environmental issues. He can speak about healthcare issues. He can speak about the economy. He can speak about immigration. And he's been doing it for a long, long time, especially immigration and trade. I expect this to be a very spirited election, but I can tell you one thing for a fact. There is no way on God's green earth that I will get involved in this election after what happened to my family after the 2016 election. I cannot see why anybody would sign on to a presidential campaign on the Republican side without being legally indemnified. You're a fool if you do, because the Democrats have decided that when they lose, they still must win. And the way they win is they investigate and they sue. And this has already cost me deep into six figures. My family can't afford it. This is the beginning of spring break across America. All my friends and their kids are in Orlando. They're all sitting by the pool today already. And certainly they'll be there next week, and they'll be going to the Disney parks and such. And my family and I, because of the bogus Russia investigation, because I was involved in Donald Trump's election, we're here in East Aurora, New York, cold in the winter, doing our thing. That's all right. I'm not complaining, but I would not be in this situation if I had not signed up on Trump's campaign. And there is no way I'll get involved in 2020. I'll be involved in the media. I'll be talking about issues just like we're talking today as your friend. And I really appreciate you listening in here on Still Standing. Again, check us out at stillstandingpodcast.com. And listen, have a great weekend. And if you're in Orlando, I know a lot of my friends who listen to this have taken off with their kids to the theme parks. If you're down in warmer weather, I wish you all the best. We're jealous, but we'll keep the snow here cold for you. Have a great week, you guys. Michael Caputo, and I'm out.